Rafe Howler, born in Sheffield, 1938.
How long did you work for Sissons?
34 years, 1960 to 94.
94.
Mm. 1960 started. 1970, I was promoted back to Sheffield as a sales manager. Then, about 1980, I was made the sales director and eventually sales and marketing director until Adairy retired. In the terms of an employee, there's two factories involved and the two are very closely interlinked. And that's where Sissons, who've been the owners for all time, more or less, had the Sheffield factory in St Mary's Road and Carver Mill, which was a later addition. And they'd been in Sheffield since the late 1700s, so obviously very old established. And then Gordon Sissons decided in 1945, I think it was, that we need to buy extra manufacturing space. So he purchased Carver Mill and then proceeded to modernise it because it was in a terrible state, having been used for various storage and warehousing facilities during the war. And he landscaped the grounds, put ponds in, and really made it look very, very attractive. And that was in 1945. And then gradually it built up in importance. There was no head office staff at Carver then. It was purely a manufacturing unit. And then eventually 1970-ish, something like that, then we moved the head office to Carver Mill and eventually closed down in Sheffield. Gordon Sissons knocked out one of the floors and gave us a greater headroom. He also reinforced the floors because, bear in mind, there's no mill building and the machinery probably wasn't as heavy as the ones we used. And so he created more space. But there was a problem moving up and down, moving up and down. Do you take the product at the bottom and work it up to the top, or do you take the product into the top and work it down to the bottom? I think we did probably a bit of both. But it was a difficult place. I was not a production man myself, but I did appreciate the problems they had of trying to get a proper order of production. And that really showed itself up when we had extensions built, both at Carver and at Chesterfield, whereby they could be laid, the factory could be laid out into a modern pattern, and you had white lines and gangways and so forth, much safer, and it looked a lot smarter, whereas in the mill you had to step over a sink to get to another sink and things of that nature. We had a natural talent, I suppose, and this is where I was principally involved, in trying to find government projects which were had some spending capacity, tag on to those and make suitable products that fitted in very nicely with how they were spending. After the war, they had to have this huge local authority housing programme. Millions were made in the terms of number of houses required, so that's an exaggeration. So we latched onto it and we developed a stainless steel round bowl sink, which was developed in the late 50s. And that sold in the thousands to, I think it's about 300 different local authorities in the UK. And that was a big earner for us. So we had to develop the facilities to manufacture and ship them around the country and so forth. That was one example. And a more later example was the prison service decided that they must improve the prisons and have washing and toilet facilities in cells. So we looked at that and thought there's going to be a lot of money being spent here. So we developed a stainless steel toilet and a stainless steel wash basin, suitable fitting into a prison cell. I took them down to the Home Office and the prison service had a look at it. I've carried toilets all over the world. And then they had a look at it and they started getting some specs together. And of course, because we were in early, our product featured quite large in the specification, which made it easy for us, which is what we tried to do. And again, as a result of that, we've finished up thousands and thousands of these units in prisons throughout the country. And as each order was for, say, 300 or 400 units. It soon built up to a very high value because they were, in those days, they were sort of £300 or £400 each. There'd be a lot more than that now. So that's another example. And so that's how life went on, and we got quite skilled at that. The school meal service was another example whereby after the war they had to create catering facilities for children at school. So we made stainless steel catering sinks and sterilising sinks, which were fitted in schools. I was having a cup of coffee at work one morning. Phone went, and it was a large firm of London architects called Building Design Partnership, who I knew quite well. Manchester Square, remember the address. And they wanted to know if we could make some stainless steel shower enclosures for use in the Falklands. Now, at the time, we just defeated the Argentinians, and everybody was sticking the chest out, saying what a wonderful country we were, quite rightly. And so he said, they've got to be done quickly. What can you do? So I said, well, what do you mean by quickly? He said, 5 days. So, right, I'll get on the train. So I immediately went to Chesterfield, got on the next train down, had an interview with them and their officers, got the drawings, and discovered that these panels are quite large, 20, 30 foot long, and it's multi-station shower units. And so I brought it back, the drawings back, called a meeting the next morning and said, look, we've got 3 days to make these. Can we do it? And with all credit to the production and technical people, we can, because everybody was roaring for anything connected with the Falklands. So we made them, did them in the required length of time, and sent them to a firm called Vic Hallam in Nottingham. He fitted them into the temporary units that they were making, and it was shipped out to the Falklands. And then, about a month later, we got an order for about 35 of them, several thousand pounds each, and that was it. And then a little aside, a young man who lived in Castleton, he went out there and he was fitting them. So they were made 10 miles from where we're sitting now, and they were fitted by a chap who lived 500 yards from where we're sitting now. We had a strange contract. Well, it wasn't strange, but it was unusual. And that was, we were approached by the Metropolitan Police, and they wanted some water containers, drinking containers for their horses. Now, I think the Metropolitan Police value their horses very highly because they're trained up to the nth degree. And they needed to build a new stable block somewhere in London, and they needed about 20 of these things. Specially made, cost a fortune. Totally and utterly uncompetitive. So we made them, and they then discovered, this is the customer, that they'd given us the wrong specification. So they sent them back to us, make some more. So we made some more. Charged them, that was it. But we're left with 20 of these very deluxe drinking water location units for the stables. So I thought, right, well, how are we going to get rid of these? Newmarket, that's the place. So I sent our man off, who covered the Newmarket area. These things were about £200 each, probably £400 now. He came back, I'd given him a sample. He went all the way around all the trains in Newmarket. I think he was a bit of a, I asked him because he's a racing buff. And he came back and he says, yes, they all like them. Very nice indeed. He said, but they're not going to pay more than a fiver each. Well, worth more than £5 in scrap. We didn't have a big turnover of people. If new people started, they would either leave fairly quickly because the face didn't fit or whatever, or they would stay for a long time, and a very, very family atmosphere there. And bearing in mind, in most of the high spot of 300 people, but mostly it was just under 200. And everybody knew each other, and you walk around the factories and you were saying hello to the people who we knew, and you knew where they worked, you knew the names. None of this business of bad management of yesteryear when managers didn't even know names of their employees. We knew the names of virtually every one of them. So it certainly was a very family atmosphere there. There was a difference between the Sheffield workers and the Carver Mill workers. and I think that was entirely due to the geography of the two locations. While they were only 13 or 14 miles apart, the Sheffield workers had an industrial heritage, and for the very earliest days of the Industrial Revolution, it was bred into them, whereas the Carver workers tended to be agricultural workers. So they had a different way of looking at things. And I suppose the benefit of looking back, there was a benefit from both sides, put the two together, and it wasn't a bad arrangement. There was a little bit of them and us, but nothing serious at all, and people by and large got on very well together. And we had difficulty in recruiting extra people, because there's nobody ready trained in the locality. So they tended to come in from afar, and that was one factor towards us moving to Chesterfield, albeit keeping Carver on and moving to Chesterfield, and then eventually closing down at Carver, because it was much easier to find trained metal workers in Chesterfield than in Carver area. I look back on it, and I think the best thing was providing sufficient orders to keep 200 people fully employed, thereby giving them and their families a living.